Blog Talk Radio. Hi, this is Marnie Svedberg, and I welcome you to Marnie and Friends, a place where leaders share practical, helpful, and encouraging ways to get anything important done faster, better, and smarter. Right now, I encourage you to sit back, buckle up, and join us for fun, laughter, practical help, and clear thinking, the kind of discussion that focuses our attention off of the fluff and onto the most important stuff in life. Again, welcome to Marnie's Friends. Let's get going. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Marnie's Friends. Excited to have you along with me this afternoon as we talk about relationship strategies. And if you are like everybody else on the planet, at some point in your life, possibly right now, these are giving you a challenge, a little bit of a hard time. And so we're going to talk about some of the best practices, some of the strategies that make relationships work, especially during times of conflict. So I'm very excited about this program because even though I don't live in conflict in my relationships, sometimes there is conflict in my relationships, and I need all the help I can get. Our guest today is Dr. Kay Julian. She's a psychologist, an educator, and a conflict resolution specialist who's passionate about equipping women to courageously face relational difficulties with self-confidence and compassion. She's an experienced speaker and a coaching workshop presenter. She's in private practice in Orlando, and she joins us today from there. Welcome, Kay.
Hi, Marnie.
So excited to have you. Yeah. This is going to be a great hour. And for those of you who haven't already done so, we do have some download notes you can get over at marniesfriends.com. And if you're not aware of it, we always keep these programs in the archives over at the leadership. It's called leadershipattitudes.com. And the archives over there at the mentorship club at marnie.com. And Kay, today you become one of our expert trainers over there. So excited about that and
great
to hear what you have to share with us.
Great.
Maybe, Kay, when was the first time you knew that you wanted to be a conflict resolution coach?
Well, that's an interesting question because it wasn't really something that I decided to do and then set out to do it. I went back to school as my children were growing up, and I was trying to decide what to do for my second career. And so I already had a master's and went to get my doctorate. And when I saw that I could get a doctorate in conflict resolution, that piqued my interest. I was a middle child for a long time, and they say middle children have peacemaking tendencies, and that was me. So I got into the whole topic, really, at that point, and just started learning about it. And I'm a psychologist, as you said, and an educator, and so I was very interested in how it all worked with our relationships and the things that I was learning about conflict. But As I was learning the things and doing my research, I would try to apply what I learned to my own life and in my own personal relationships. And for a long time, nothing really seemed to fit. The tools seemed to be external to me, sort of, five steps to resolution or
how to
negotiate win-win solutions. And even the good old communication kind of teaching, I would get in the throes of the relational difficulty, and who can think of what kind of language you're supposed to use in the middle of all that? And so I was always looking for something that really fit me. And finally, I really lined up with what I knew of human behavior, what I knew of God's wishes for relationships, and it turned out to be something that I could develop that was intuitive to me. And I started doing these things, and it really lined up with all my beliefs, and I was able to apply the learning to my life and actually make some progress. And then I just kind of went, well, gee, I'm probably not the only person in the world who might feel like this. And I realized that I didn't, more than jumping in the middle of a conflict and trying to help people work it out, I had a greater desire to just help the people themselves develop their own ways to work it out themselves. And so then after I realized that desire, I found out that there was such a thing as conflict coaching. So that's how I ended up there. And here we are today.
And here we are. And today you are going to be talking to us about three strategies. Number one, developing a new approach. Number two, developing a new understanding. And number three, developing a new response. And you're basing your training today off a couple of verses I really like, Proverbs 24, 3 and 4, which says, "By wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it is established. Through knowledge its rooms are filled with rare and beautiful treasures." Oh, I just love that. And don't we all long for our homes to be that kind of a house that is filled with rare and beautiful treasures, children
yeah.
that are wonderful, and relationships that are wonderful. Okay, well, I am ready to dive right in here.
Okay.
To developing a new approach. So why don't you just launch us right off?
Okay. Well, I would like to mention, when you mentioned about the Proverbs verses, the first strategy is the wisdom part, the second strategy is the understanding part, and the third strategy is the knowledge part of
okay.
those verses. So that's the blueprint for where we're going to go today. So yes, develop a new approach, and that approach is embrace relational difficulties as part of the fabric of human relationships and be proactive.
I'm going to have you repeat it again in a second, but can you just tell us an example of it?
Well, an example of what?
How that looks. How does that look to embrace a relational difficulty?
Well, maybe I'll start with what it doesn't look like.
Okay.
The contrast might help. Typically, as we move through our life, when it comes to relational difficulties, we don't really embrace them. We don't really like to think of them as part of our relationship. We more tend to want to think of them as more like a blip on the radar, rather than something that is part of the fabric of the relationship. We tend to have sort of a negative idea of relational difficulties, and we really just want to always be on the same page and have things running smoothly. And so we tend to not really learn much about how to deal with the differences. And we end up just sort of having something go wrong and then just trying to get through it. And then we're glad it's over and we move on to the calm waters again. And we don't really look at our relationships as having these difficulties, because we just think it's something that's not good. And when I say that we need to embrace them as part of our relationships, I mean that we need to just recognize it's just simply a fact of our life with one another here in this fallen world. Relational difficulties are just simply a function of two human beings who are different from one another, trying to be in relationship. And we're always going to bump into those differing perspectives, differing desires, differing needs. And we're going to have a little friction as we are trying to sort of work through, oh, you don't look at this like I do. Oh, what do we do now? And if we just not panic and say, oh, this is really bad, this isn't really good that we are having this situation, if we just realize, well, hey, this is, we're bumping into who you are and who I am in this situation, and then we can relax and say, well, let's see what we want to do from here. And we go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. I was thinking when you were talking about what it isn't, I was thinking, okay, so the phrase that you said first was we should embrace relational difficulties as part of the fabric of human relationships and be proactive. Mm-hmm. But I think I find myself, I mostly want to avoid or survive relational difficulties. And so I think the key word here is embrace. That's a big thought to actually, instead of running from or getting out from under or whatever, to actually turn around and to embrace it. That's interesting.
Well, it's not so much that you have to say, oh boy, but it is more to take it out of that sort of negative, exceptional kind of thinking and more normalize it and just see that it's just part of who we are. Unless you're dealing with a clone of yourself, which is not too likely yet in this day and age, you're going to run into something that's different about the other person sooner or later. They're going to see something differently from you, and you're going to have to deal with it. And yes, Marnie, a lot of people try to avoid it, and most of the times it's because we just don't know what to do. We don't know how to look at it. We don't know what to do with it. And that's why I have the be proactive part in that strategy. Because if you look at it as something that you can get smart about, that you can learn about, that you can change about yourself and how you behave, that you can increase your understanding of the other person who's in the relationship with you, and you gather some tools and gather some wisdom, then you're not as fearful. And you can just courageously face some things because you know what to do. So
are we going to talk in the later parts, are we going to talk about what to actually do? Because I had another follow-up question here.
Yes, the develop a new response is one of the things to do, yes.
Okay.
We're only going to talk about one thing. We're going to zero in on one thing to do today because, of course, there are a gazillion things you can do, and that's why I coach people individually, because then I can help them very specifically with what they need to do.
When you say the word embrace, that we're supposed to embrace the relational difficulties, how do you, okay, so someone, let's say an extended family member, possibly a cousin or an aunt or something, is all of a sudden in conflict with you over something, and you can see this is happening, but how do you think right in that moment?
Well, that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. That's why I say be proactive, because you typically can't think right in that moment.
Okay.
And so we need to, that's why we need to develop some understanding, that's why we need to develop some wisdom, and that's why we need to learn some things to do for ourselves so that when we're in that moment, we recognize it and say, oh, this is this, and this is how I handle this.
Okay, so that's the entire strategy, is that this is this. Because actually I wrote that down, this is, just to say, okay, this is just where I'm at, kind of like an address. I'm just here now. This is where I am.
Yes, but it more becomes a recognition of your own reactions and where you go in that situation, and a recognition of what happens, what is happening in the moment that you learn to recognize and learn how to respond to.
Okay. All right. All right. Should we move on to number two, or is there more there that you were hoping to
Well, there's just one other thing I wanted to add. Throughout the Bible, we are exhorted to pursue peace, that we are to make every effort in this regard to pursue peace. Some translations of Romans 14:19 say, pursue the things that make for peace. And that is another element of this first strategy. Like you said, typically we either avoid conflict or we just want it to stop. We just want it to stop. We just want it to be over. But the Bible urges us to turn that whole perspective around and to pursue the things that help you make peace, to pursue the things that are going to help you behave in the way that you want to behave that brings glory to God, and to behave in a way that brings mutual edification to one another, that we need to pursue those things, that we need to follow after those things. And that's why I say be proactive. Don't just be thinking about stopping the conflict or stopping the difficulties. Be thinking about being proactive and pursuing the things that are going to bring peace in every situation that you engage.
Hmm. Well, this is Marnie Swedberg, and I can already tell I'm having a little mental paradigm shift here during this conversation, which is exactly what we're going for. I think that I've always thought that I was pursuing peace by avoiding or surviving direct conflict. So I know that the rest of this program is going to be just for me, and hopefully it's just for you, too. We're going to come right back and find out about developing a new understanding. We'll be right back.
Have you added your women's Bible study yet to www.BibleStudyExpo.com? It's free, it's easy, and it makes it possible for new believers and gals who are new to your community to find you and your women's Bible study. So go to www.BibleStudyExpo.com and add your women's Bible study today. Do you ever need speakers for dinners, retreats, conferences, or other women's events? Check out www.womenspeakers.com. It's the largest online directory of Christian women speakers in the world, featuring over 1,500 Christian women speakers, some near you, and some from every level of experience and fee range you can imagine. So you're sure to find lots of great speaker options for you and your next event over at www.womenspeakers.com. That's Women Speakers.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back. This is Marnie Swedberg. We're visiting today with Dr. Kay Julian. Her website is confidentconflict.com, and that is what our training is about today. And I have to just tell you that when I first discovered Kay, I was excited about it because conflict is not something I do well. I do well at avoiding conflict, okay? That's all. And I'm a middle child, too, so I really hear you there. We are the peacemakers, where we like to avoid the conflict or get through it as quickly as possible. And I can tell that I'm going to walk away from this interview today with a little bit of a different perspective than I had coming into it. I can already tell that. And I'm excited to take us further. Before we do, I just want to repeat for those of you who are trying to capture it in writing, or those of you who just joined us, that strategy number one was to develop a new approach, to embrace relational difficulties as part of the fabric of human relationships and be proactive. Okay, Gay, why don't you go ahead and introduce strategy number two?
Okay, Marnie. I was just thinking during the break that before I do that, that one thing that I might say, you had asked a little bit earlier about what did it look like to actually do that strategy. Yeah. And I realized that I could say one example, particularly if you're a leader, you have a ministry or a business or any kind of organization. One example of being proactive in this regard is to understand that relational difficulties are very predictable. And you can pretty much guess when you're going to cause waves in your organization Any kind of change, you know, anytime you put the word new in front of anything, new product, new rules, new supervisor, new schedule,
right.
I guess this goes for family too, there's going to be difficulties because everybody's going to approach change differently. And everybody is going to have different concerns and different ideas about how to handle the change. And so one example of being proactive is that you anticipate that and you set some kind of process in place. You set up some kind of structure. For instance, you might say to you have a senior staff and you say, we're going to come online with this new summer schedule and we know that's just going to throw everybody off. So it's going to be one of our agenda items every week. How's everybody doing with this? What's going on? What are you hearing? What concerns are coming up? You might want to say to your to the rest of the people in your organization, remember, I have an open door policy, and I invite you to come and tell me what this is doing in your life that you're having trouble with. And that sort of thing, where you're proactive about it. You anticipate that it's just going to come, and you try to set up pathways for the people to talk about it, to address the concerns, to hear the concerns, to really invite the dialogue about the conflict and the differences, rather than just sort of be in crisis response and doing damage control.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
won't.
That's that, great.
Yeah. yeah, it doesn't eliminate it because there's always going to be somebody, you know.
Yeah.
but that's an example. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
So the second strategy, the second part of the sentence of that verse is through understanding it is established. The house is established. In this case, we're talking about a relationship. So develop a new understanding, and here's another long sentence. Be aware of the two core relationship needs and how relational difficulties impact them. So I know you want me to say, okay, well, what are the needs? We better start with what the relational needs are.
Right.
I'm assuming here.
Yep, go for it. Yep.
All human beings have two very core relational needs. These are needs that we need to feel in every relationship that we have with another human being. We need to feel autonomous, meaning we need to feel that we are separate from the other person, that we have our own voice, our own thoughts, our own contribution to the relationship, that we're behaving how we want to behave in the relationship. In other words, a sense of personal strength of being an individual. But we also need, and this is equally core, to feel emotionally connected to the other person. That back and forth flow of respect or consideration, interest, caring, support. As I mentioned earlier, the Bible calls this mutual edification. These are core needs, and when we're in a relationship, we need to feel both of these things. Both people need to feel both of these things in a very balanced way. We need to feel both autonomy and connection. And when these needs are being met in the relationship in a balanced way for each person, we have a well-functioning relationship. And we can even talk about our differences. Many of us have experienced this. If you think about a relationship that you have with someone that's pretty decent, and you might start talking about different viewpoints that you have, and you might even get a little passionate, but you're doing fine. You keep talking. You don't start to have friction or any kind of conflict because you're respecting each other as you're talking. You're keeping that connection going. You're expressing yourself the way you want to express yourself. It's you can tell that everything's functioning well. It's like if you talk about going out to dinner with someone and one person says, "Boy, I really want Italian tonight," and the other person says, "Oh, gee, I just had Italian, a couple of days ago," and then the first person says, "Oh, well, yeah, that's a bummer. I know what that's like. You get ready to go out again, and it's the same kind of food. I'm not too sure what to think, though. I really did kind of want some Italian," the other person says. And so you just talk about it, and you're just calm. You don't fight. You're just calm. And the other person, you're both trying to consider each other. You're both trying to think of how you're feeling and hear each other. And then finally somebody says, "Well, hey, how about the such-and-such restaurant? They've got really good Italian, but I also know they have really good ribs. And right. How would that be?" And you just very calmly work that through. It all functions well because everyone is expressing themselves well and feeling that autonomy, and you're staying connected. So those are the relational needs and how they are in us. and actually, Marnie, the Lord designed us to be this way. Exactly. This is His design. He is the one who created us with the desire for these things. We could just see all through the Bible, and particularly in the New Testament, we see this autonomy, this personal responsibility, personal accountability, sort of standing alone as an individual, linked all the time with loving others, showing compassion for others, helping one another. Philippians tells us that we shouldn't just look after our own interests, but we also look after the interests of others. Even the body of Christ, we are individual members connected together in one body. You think of the very first relationship, Adam and Eve. God said it's not good for man to be alone, all alone. He needs to have someone else to be connected to. But he didn't just sort of morph Adam into something. He created a whole separate person who was completely different from Adam, and brought them together then to be connected. We just see this over and over, this core part of us to be completely ourselves, but also completely connected.
As soon as you said that those were the two, which actually surprised me, because I was expecting you to say that the two core needs are love and, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you said autonomy and emotional connection, my immediate response to that was, oh, interesting, because there are certain people who just have a way of making me feel stifled, like I have no autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other people who make me feel emotionally disconnected from them, like
mm-hmm.
they don't want to, And
mm-hmm.
it's interesting because that you can really just instantly see there are, I'm sure all of us are imbalanced, but there are some people that are, very imbalanced in one way or the other that you can just immediately sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's hard to be around that person
mm-hmm.
more, is because of that. Now, what happens, though, so let's say that we're a fairly balanced person, autonomy and emotionally connect. We're fairly balanced in that. We're not way off one side or the other. But now we get in conflict with somebody. What changes right now?
Mm-hmm. Well, in a nutshell, everything gets all out of balance.
Well, we were before, now we are.
Excuse me?
I said where we weren't out of balance before, now we are.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you're having the conversation because, you generally don't come out swinging. Usually you sort of get to that place where things go amiss. So you're having the conversation and you're doing your back and forth, talking about something, and then you kind of feel it's getting a little bit tense. You're not really sure what's going on, and then all of a sudden something happens, and the whole thing, the whole conversation is just all out of whack now. You don't even know how you got there, but you've taken a turn, and now you are not, you personally are not acting from that balanced place of autonomy. You might be feeling confused, can't even barely think, as you said earlier, maybe feeling kind of helpless, some self-doubt kind of comes in, or you know, whatever we might be experiencing. Somebody, the other person might have said something hurtful, or you might have said something to alienate them, and then wham, that connection's been damaged. It might even be that both of you are feeling so angry, who even cares about being connected? These core needs are just completely knocked off balance. But what happens is, because they are so core, we instinctively then we start fighting to get them back in balance. Mm-hmm. And we start fighting for those needs, fighting to regain that autonomy, fighting to regain that connection. And that's how we get completely off the original issue. Going back to that dinner example, if one of the people had said, say the person said, oh, I just ate Italian last week, I'd really like to go somewhere else. And the other person said, well, I really had my heart set on going to this restaurant. I really want to go to this Italian restaurant. And the first person says, well, isn't there, you know, something else we could look at to think about? And the second person says, no, I really want to go to that restaurant. And you can almost kind of hear now, so the scales have tipped. This person is really, they're not really thinking of both, you know, mutual interests. This person is really sort of more focused on what they want to do. And so what does the first person say? They say, this isn't all about you, you know. And we could go somewhere where I'd like to go once in a while. And then the second person says, just went there last week. We always do what you want to do. And then you can hear it. You're complete. Right. You're not talking about dinner anymore. Now you're talking about who gets to do what when you're fighting for those needs in that relationship. And we're off.
Yeah. So interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
This is, let's go ahead and review this, and we're going to take one more short break, and then we're going to come back and understand the new response. I can't wait to hear that part. Okay, so this was, number one was to develop a new approach, and that was embrace relational difficulties as part of the fabric of human relationships and be proactive. Number two was develop a new understanding, be aware of the needs and how relational difficulties needs. Three, it's going to be developed thoughts and learn. Successfully maximizing the gifts God has given us is the best gift that we can give back to God. Are you 100% clear about why you're here, about how God defines success for you personally? Are you on track with God's plan for your life? The best life on planet Earth followed by the best possible eternity for you? If not, check out the Success Principles Intensive Training course over at Marnie.com. It's a 6-hour online program that will change how you define and do your life from today forward. It's a biblically based approach to goal setting and achievement. So check it out under the Training tab at Marnie.com. Confidentconflict.com. We've been sharing about the strategy. You know, strategies, really, the mindsets behind situations. The first one is to develop a new approach and actually to just recognize counselor, if you're in trials. Actually, what I really like to do best, Julie, and I just have, or Kay, I have to just tell you that I love to just avoid it. It's much more comfortable for me that way. But number two is to develop a new understanding that everybody has two core needs, the autonomy and the need to be emotionally connected. And then the third one is to develop a new response. And that's where we are right now. So why don't you take that away?
Okay. Well, first I would like to say that it's important to understand all this, because really the most hurtful part of those kinds of conversations is the way we treat each other, the interaction between us. When you think about a rough exchange that you've had with someone, even if you resolve the issue, you still feel bad about that interaction. You might walk away from it feeling bad about how you behaved, and just saying, I don't really like how I was in that situation, or certainly how maybe they might have behaved toward you. And so when we make our efforts to try to learn how to be better at this, sometimes we go all around the issues and we don't really work on these core needs. And because this is how God made us, and this is what really matters to us in our relationships, then we can get pretty weary in the struggle of trying to work on this stuff when we are missing the mark. And when we can learn ways of getting things back in balance, of getting back to the good interaction again, to where we can talk to each other again, then our efforts will go to the heart of the matter, and we'll be able to keep talking to each other and have a way to work things out. In other words, we will have a pathway to pursue peace in our relationships. So I just
before
to
you
that.
Before you go. Before you go to number three, okay. does this practice that you're teaching us, does it work if only one of you is on board with it? I mean, will it help even if the other person has no desire to improve the
absolutely.
Conversation in a conflict?
Absolutely. Cool. Sorry. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because this is not about here's how you get to resolution. This is about how you can be different, how you can be different. And when you are different in the way that you would like to be different, and you learn the things that you would like to learn, then you have done what you wanted to do. And when you can find ways to hold on to your autonomy and to maintain your part of that connection, the other person will react to that. They will feel that. They won't know exactly what's going on, but you impact the conversation for peace. And so that's why it does work. I mean, that's why you can go ahead and do it, because it doesn't depend on the other person. That was part of my frustration that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that it was like, if the other person isn't subscribing to these rules or these practices, then I can't affect a change. I can't affect the peace. And so when I learned about all this stuff, I could see a way to just really make some progress on my own. So yes.
Awesome, and I think it must have been the part.
Okay, Marnie, you're on my phone. You're kind of cutting out. Are you still hearing me? Okay.
I am, but I will let you go ahead and start with number three, and I will try to redial in.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So. So just like you said earlier, this is all great to be thinking about and understanding this, but what do we do? What do we do? So I'm going to present now a little process, one process to help you to do strategy number three, develop a new response. And that response is a purposeful action that will strengthen you and contribute to your peace in the conversation. Now, we talked about a couple of, that there were two equally important core needs. And today, in the interest of time, we're just going to work on the autonomy need. This is just going to be something to help you maintain your balance in your autonomy in those kind of conversations. It always is good to start with ourselves anyway, just like the old campfire song says, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. So that's where we're going to start today. It's actually a very powerful place to begin. Proverbs tells us that it's a hot-tempered person that stirs up strife, but the person who is slow to anger and is cool in spirit can actually calm the quarrel, can actually quiet the contentions. So that's our target today, to help you discover something that will help you remain cool in spirit so that you can actually quiet the quarrel. And when you are not quarreling with the other person, then you're really free to be open to their perspective and open to loving them and maintaining your connection with them. So the first thing I need to say very emphatically, though, this is all in the context of just regular, everyday relationships. This is not something to think about if you're in an abusive relationship or a relationship that involves addictions or somebody threatening to kill you. Please do not go there with this. This is just for regular, everyday relationships that we have in our lives. So, as I say, the point of this strategy is to develop a new response. And since it's the autonomy need, we want to target a place in a conversation for you where there was that autonomy sort of went out of balance, where you experienced a loss of strength, some tipping point to where you could tell that you sort of lost yourself. So first I'm going to give a quick overview of the process, and then I'm going to break it down and try to walk through it using an example, paralleling with an example, so that you get an idea of how this works. Are you still there, Marnie?
I'm back, yes.
Okay,
go ahead.
Good. Now, remember earlier I said we're to be proactive. So this is not something you do in the heat of the moment. This process isn't something you do in the heat of the moment, but our end product is something for you to do in the heat of the moment. So you're going to identify that loss of strength, that tipping point where you feel that decrease in your autonomy, when you feel that personal strength sort of go out of balance. And then we're going to regain that strength for yourself by renewing your mind, and then you're going to come up with a new way to behave in that situation, something that you can choose to do differently that will help you to maintain that balance and hold that ground in the heat of the moment. So I have four words to help us think about all this. Notice, investigate, renovate, and choose. Notice, investigate, renovate, and choose. Notice everything that was going on at that tipping point in the conversation, what was happening, what you're feeling, what they were saying and doing. Investigate what you're thinking at that time. The Bible tells us that our thoughts direct our actions, so that's where we want to do our work. We want to see what we were thinking. Renovate that thinking. We're going to challenge it. We're going to renovate it, knock down walls, put up new ones, and come up with some new thinking. And then we're going to choose a new behavior. And that's the thing that we can do for ourselves in the heat of the moment when that happens. So this process is about changing something that you would like to change, some way that you behave that you would like to do differently. Because when we understand this about the core needs and we desire to change something to improve something, then usually we don't know where to begin, but we can kind of say, does this have something to do with my personal strength, my autonomy, or does this have something to do with that connection with the other person? And it gives us a good point of entry for change. So this particular strategy, develop a new response, is I want to come up with a new response in a particular situation, a particular difficult situation. So again, we're going to try to identify that tipping point where the scales are tipped in that loss of autonomy. We're going to renovate our thinking and regain that loss, rebalance that scale. And then we're going to choose to do something different next time that's going to help me keep that in balance in the heat of the moment. So now I'll go through it with an example, and I would invite you and the listeners to, there might be something that you might think of in one of your relationships that you might be able to think of as we go through this. Maybe your spouse, or maybe it doesn't even, I'm going to use an example that has to do with another person, but this, you might just want to change something just internally yourself, and you can just plug anything in you'd like to, but I'm going to use an example from my practice. So I'm going to use an example I want to develop a new response to use in my conversations at work with a woman that, I will call her Sarah. That's my daughter's name, so good and safe here. And I want to do something different with Sarah. We work together, and we generally work together well, but we are very different people. And we are dealing with relational differences quite a bit and get into difficulties sometimes. And I never like how I am at the end of those conversations. And so I want to do something different. And I can tell that it's something about me, it's something to do with my need for autonomy in the situation. And so that's what I want to work on today. So
So we lost you, Kay. It cut out right at you want to change something about the way that you're doing it. You don't like how you feel at the end of the conversation, and you're going to change something about the way that you're doing it.
Yes. I want to develop a new response with this woman, and I want to work on, I can tell that it has to do with my autonomy need.
Okay.
So notice, the first word, notice. So I want to identify that tipping point in the conversation when I go out of balance and what was going on then. So what I notice is that it happens, I can hang in there with Sarah generally for a while, even when things get a little tense, but the tipping point for me is when she sort of turns on me and says something sort of threatening. It's usually a withdrawal of resources, of support or manpower or budget money or something. It's usually a withdrawal of resources. I'll be trying to talk to her about a project, and she'll say, well, I'm not going to support that. That's just not going to work, and I'm not going to support that. And I don't know if you'll be able to find anybody that will help you work on Saturday with that. She just said something like that, and that is the tipping point for me. I notice how I feel when that happens. I feel all shaken up. I lose my focus then. I can tell I start to get kind of nervous. I notice what she looks like to me, and how I am feeling at that moment, what I'm experiencing. For me, it's sort of in the fight or flight range. It's a sort of a flight feeling, but some people, when that happens, they have more of a fighting response and get angry. But either way, that's the tipping point. When she all of a sudden says those words to me, says some kind of threatening thing to me, that shakes me up. So next, I investigate my thinking. What was I thinking? What do I think then? I think, oh no, she's really not going to help me here, and I thought she was going to help me. Or what am I believing here? Oh no, if she doesn't help me, the project will probably fall on its face. Or she might be right. I might not be able to get anybody to come help me work on Saturday, and I'm really believing that what she's saying is going to affect me in a way that I'm not really going to be able to recover from. And most importantly, what am I believing about me that is producing this loss of autonomy? I'm thinking I don't have any other options, or I don't have any other resources, or, oh no, I'm not really going to be able to succeed in this project if she doesn't help me. I'm believing something, and I can just feel that strength sort of draining out of me when she says that. And for Christians particularly, another question is, what am I believing or maybe not believing about God in this moment? Sometimes we're not even thinking about God in that moment. So I've identified that moment of the scales tipping. I've identified what I'm thinking, and now I want to renovate that thinking. You know, the Bible tells us that the way we're transformed is by the renewal of our minds. And the Greek word for renewal there is renovate. And so that's what we're going to do. Like I said, we're going to challenge that thinking. Is that accurate? Am I lost without her? No. I have plenty of people. I have plenty of resources. You know, what is the reality there? What will happen if I can't get anybody to work on Saturday? Is that really true? Well, not necessarily. I probably can find some people to work on Saturday. I just don't need to swallow what she's saying to me. I'm well respected here at work. I can get the job done, and then especially if I remember about God, God's in this, and whatever happens, He will be doing His part in this. And so I come to the conclusion. I come to a new conclusion in my stronger self, in my autonomous self, that I will be okay. Whatever Sarah says, whatever she withdraws from me, I will be okay. And so I don't have to be subject to this fear or this interaction, because I'll be okay. Whatever she says, I will be okay on my own. As my autonomous self, I will be able to take care of this, and especially if I believe that God is going to help me too. So I shore that up. I find that place that sort of where I sort of fall apart, and I renovate my thinking to shore that up. And then I just choose a new behavior. I say, okay, the next time this happens, then I might just say, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but for now, this is the way we're going to do the project. Or that might happen, but I guess I'll just have to cross that bridge when I come to it. And for now, let's just finish this discussion. I choose something that I can do, that I can plan to do it again in the future, because it's going to happen again, because that's the way she behaves. And I just be proactive about that and come up with something that works for me, so that I can just hold on to that sense of autonomy for myself and not let the scales tip.
Huh. Very good. Wow. Yeah, I'm just writing notes here as you're going along. such good stuff. And I think that they're all critical points. But maybe that noticing and investigating, without that, you could try to renovate or choose, and it wouldn't get you very far.
Right.
You really do have to stop at that first point and really say, what am I believing here? Because, and honestly, when we have close relationships, either close working relationships or family relationships or in our churches, in our ministries, we are surrounded with those people because we do typically trust them. You know, I mean, that's mm-hmm. we like to choose people that we love and trust to be around most of the time. And so when someone in that position of love and trust says something to us that is not quite accurate with what God says about us or about the situation, that's where I maybe get into the most trouble, because I tend to put a lot more value on what they're saying maybe than it deserves, just because of the position I've given them in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Exactly, exactly. It's sort of like, oh, I need to listen to them. They're talking with such authority, or like you said, I've given them such a place of influence and you can just feel that coming out of you. That you can feel that balance tipping. I'm no longer my strong self. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Mm.
And so the idea is to do the work so that then when they do that again, you whatever it is you've come up with for yourself. I had a client that just would say to herself, steady girl. She would just say, steady girl. You know, because
that's
she
great.
And
yeah.
What that meant to her was, you don't have to go there. That, you know, you've already done the work. You know that's not true. It's fine. You know, you stay who
right.
you are, you know, that, but, you know, you just come up with something that's going to work for you to, as you figure out what you need to shore up and how you need to shore it up. And that, and you, like I say, you regain that ground and you solidify it so that then when you encounter it again, you already know what to say, and you just stay steady. And don't go there.
Just reminds me, I did a training on Tuesday night about, and part of it was the perceptions are our reality. And when we perceive that this person has way more power over us than they do, than God has really given them, then that puts us in a position of fear. And that's a lot of times where we get into trouble and conflict, is really believing that they have as much power as they think they do in the moment.
Yeah.
Very, very yeah. fascinating. But good yeah. stuff. Well, we are almost out of time here, Kay. In about a minute or two, do you have a final thought you want to leave with us?
I would just like to say mainly to everyone to just be encouraged. Be encouraged. We can all have great hope here. We can learn things. We can be different. Our relationships can be different. We can behave in ways that are honoring to God, because He has equipped us. He will empower us. We can be encouraged because peace is within our reach, because Jesus, the Prince of Peace, has made sure of that for us.
Mm, that's beautiful. Well, Kay, thank you so much. It's been fun to meet you here today and to hear these thoughts from your broad background with working with people in conflict situations. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Marnie. I love talking about this stuff. So it was great fun, great fun. Thank you very much.
That's great. And everybody, if you want to learn more about Dr. Kay Juline, her website is confidentconflict.com. That's confidentconflict.com. Hope you'll go over there. And thank you so much for joining us. We will be back next week with another edition of Marnie's Friends. And until then, I hope that you have a lovely, lovely day, a wonderful week, and that you will start to practice and to employ some of these wonderful. I'm so excited to just put these to practice myself. I've been taking a lot of notes here, and I realize that a lot of times I do that in the moment. I actually let somebody take more power over me than they really have been given by God, and I get fearful or I get reactive or whatever. So I am excited to apply these, and I hope you will too. Until next time, have a great day, and we'll see you later. Bye-bye.